Welcome to the daily full show podcast of the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
The Power Station.
This is Ray Hadley in the morning, right across Australia.
Good morning and welcome. Thursday the 28th of May. I'm Ray Hadley. Great to have your company on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC and stations on the Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Networks. Top of 23 in the city of Sydney, same out west and 24 in Brisbane. We'll check the weather across the rest of the listening area shortly. And no matter where you are, the number is the same, 131873. Email me, either rayhadley.com, 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au, and access information from the program by going to facebook.com/The Ray Hadley Morning Show. Now, before we get into news across the nation, a cyclist has been hit and killed by a truck at Rose Bay in the eastern part of Sydney. The man was struck on New South Head Road near Kent Road. Now, the TMC's Rebecca Walsh is telling us traffic is so bad in that area, so bad, on New South Head Road, they're advising commuters to stay off the road entirely. People in the northern part of Sydney have had a battle this morning as well. Motorists were having significant delays on the Pacific Highway through Tarramurra due to a serious car and motorcycle accident at Rohini Street. Southbound motorists are queued, or were queued, about 9 km back onto the M1, the Pacific Motorway. There was a contraflow in place all morning, so to the people who have finally negotiated their way through that, well, it's been a pretty ordinary morning, and I hope the motorcyclist is okay. Unfortunately, a cyclist has been hit and killed at Rose Bay. State of Origin number one last night. I'm a little croaky because I was there until very late calling the game. A great atmosphere there, over 80,000 fans, and they made plenty of noise. In fact, I think they made more noise than when I was there in 2000 for Cathy Freeman's gold medal performance in the 400. Well done to Queensland. They did what they usually do at Origin level. They simply find a way to win. At 6-0, they look good. Then they're down 10-6. Then back at 10-all. And they get one chance at a field goal. They don't blow it. Cooper Cronk from 21 or 22 out goes bang, crash, wallop. Up the other end of the field trying to level up to go to Golden Point. And the dummy half, it should have gone to Hodkinson, but it went back to Dugan, who was wrong-footed, standing on the wrong side, beat the first line of defence and had a snap at field goal, which was wide of the mark. But in the end, it wasn't the greatest Origin game I've ever called, but the fact that it was so close right until the death and the fact that the crowd got right into it. In the end, 11-10, and New South Wales has to regroup for Melbourne on June 17. I did go across to the Novotel to meet our ladies who won the Ray Hadley Girls Night Out. And for the first time, I walked from the eastern side of ANZ over to the western side and then along parallel to the Sydney Showground to the Novotel. And I hadn't done that ever because normally I just get there and go up to the broadcast box. But the international food outlets and the dozens and dozens of them there, maybe 100 or so, and all the people milling around in the licensed areas, really a carnival atmosphere. Quite incredible, quite incredible. Yesterday, I revealed on the program the incredible action by the ICAC, Independent Commission Against Corruption in New South Wales, against Margaret Kinnean, a prosecutor, in fact, a deputy Crown prosecutor. And it comes right in the middle of her returning to work on Monday to prosecute an alleged murderer. Working for the DPP, and the ICAC asked the DPP to investigate her. Apart from anything else, the DPP are prosecutors, they're not investigators. Why didn't the ICAC ask the New South Wales Police to investigate? They say they've got intercepts. I mean, it really does smack of getting a square here. And the matter is, it's just a disgrace. And I would have thought once the Premier had met with the Commissioner, Megan Latham, and laid down new ground rules that they could have moved on from this, but they appear intent on ruining this woman for some reason. I don't know why. There's a great comment piece by Chris Merritt today in the Australian newspaper, and I'll talk to Chris later this morning. He says it's hard to decide how to characterise yesterday's actions by the New South Wales Corruption Watchdog. Petty, vindictive and petulant all sound about right. Now that its investigation of Prosecutor Margaret Kinnean SC has been found to be beyond its jurisdiction, the ICAC did what it does best It smeared her. It issued a 622-word media release yesterday that reads more like an adverse report on someone who's already guilty of perverting the course of justice. This comes close to the sort of conduct that has been found by the High Court to be beyond the agency's remit. Now, that's what it is. It's smearing her. It's all this, you know, oh, we believe and, you know, we've passed it on. Now, Chris Merritt, the legal affairs editor of The Australian, will join me after 10 o'clock this morning because... it's great to have watchdogs. But who's watching the watchdog? Who seem to be in pursuit of this woman, come what may. Absolutely come what may. Now, David Levine, the former Supreme Court judge, is the watchdog. He's the director of the ICAC. He's supposed to watch the watchdog. And he's been very forthcoming previously. I wonder if he's going to be as forthcoming this time. Because it does appear... that there's some agenda here. And what could happen under this commissioner, all the good work of the ICAC over many years could be brought asunder. Now, Andrew Clunnell, writing in the Telegraph, suggests that the reason it didn't go to police is because there's a perception that Margaret Kenneen is too well connected with the New South Wales Police Force. Well, isn't that casting aspersions on members of the New South Wales Police Force that they wouldn't investigate Miss Kenneen with the same rigour they investigate other people? I mean, the whole thing smacks of just absolute payback because she had the audacity to go to the High Court and the audacity to actually win against the ICAC. It really is poor form in more ways than one. Also disgraceful is the inexplicable decision that I reported yesterday by the DPP in New South Wales to ask the coroner in the Lindt Cafe murders not to investigate the role of the Greg Smith bail laws and what role, if any, they played in Man Monner still walking the streets of Sydney when he killed these people. Now, Janet Fife Yeomans has followed the story that Chris Reason reported to me yesterday. Remarkably, it hasn't been reported anywhere else. I can't find a line in Fairfax. I can't find a line in The Australian. What, you don't think this is an important story at Fairfax? That the DPPs are trying to stop the inquest into the Martin Place siege from examining why gunman Man Monis was free on bail? You don't think that's a story? Thank God Janet Fife Yeomans thinks it's a story. He was released on bail despite being charged with an accessory after the fact of murder, she writes, and 43 charges of sexually assaulting some of the women who went to him for so-called spiritual healing. Lloyd Babb from the DPP, he is the DPP, had not challenged the decisions by the two magistrates to grant Monis bail. Now, you will remember that he was denied bail in the first instance, and then a magistrate in December 2013, William Pearce, gave him bail over his wife's alleged murder, saying Monis was not a threat to other people. I bet Mr. Pearce is rueing the day he said that. But then he was incarcerated when he came before the court on the sexual assault charges, by a magistrate. Then the Greg Smith bail laws changed on May 20th of last year. He was incarcerated. He went back and appealed the bail decision of the earlier magistrate, and Joan Bapty, on the 26th of May, gave him bail under the new bail laws. I'm not blaming her. I'm blaming the state government. And then more charges were levied against him, and another magistrate later that year, Magistrate Pinch, Darrell Pinch, I think her name is, if my memory serves me correctly, she also continued his bail. Now, the simple fact of the matter is, if bail had been denied and the bail laws had not been changed by Mr. Smith, well, he would have been in jail. He couldn't have killed anyone. He couldn't have possibly killed anyone. And so why would the DPP... I've been spending the last 24 hours trying to understand why they would oppose a thorough investigation of the bail laws. The coroner, Mr. Barnes, will make a decision taking argument on Friday, tomorrow, about all of this. It just seems bizarre. What we want to find out is what caused the death of Tori Johnson and Katrina Dawson, and could it have been avoided? And if it could have been avoided by tougher bail laws, we need to understand that as well. Now, Andrew Clunnell's written another piece about Greg Smith, And I quote from Andrew, he said, the soft on crime of former Attorney General in New South Wales, Greg Smith, is back as a prosecutor for the DPP, having been hired as a private barrister to take on a sexual assault trial. Smith told Andrew Clunnell yesterday he lost the trial, that of a police officer charged with several counts of sexual and common assault between 2001 and 2009. He said blandly, oh, we can't win them all. Be nice if you won one. The man was found not guilty in six counts of sexual assault. The jury was hung on two counts of common assault. And Andrew says the latest role Smith has is ironic, given he appointed his boss, Director of Public Prosecutions, Lloyd Babb. I mean, you've got all these rules about politicians not being able to use their power outside of Parliament, investigations into blokes lobbying people and doing this at the moment. Former politicians from the Central Coast of New South Wales reported 2 or 3 days ago that, oh, you know, you can't join this lobby mob because you would have been a minister. Well, how the bloody hell does Greg Smith get appointed to get a quid out of the DPP by the bloke he appointed? If Chris Hartcher can't be a lobbyist or can't sit on boards, or Andrew Stoner can't do this and can't do that, how in God's name does this bloke get hired as a public prosecutor to put money in his kick, and he gets appointed by the bloke he appointed? The IC, spend some time on that, Megan Latham. Figure that one out. Ring Lloyd and say, hey, Lloyd, you got appointed by Greg Smith and now you're giving Greg Smith work. Can you explain yourself? No, no, won't do that. Anyway, I'll continue to try and get answers on that one. Look, this story bubbles along again about this Tara Nettleton woman. Now, she's described as a jihadi bride. It says here that she's desperately trying to get her children away from Syria and return here. Her father, Peter Nettleton, hasn't seen his daughter for 10 years. Her mother, Karen, who apparently went to Malaysia to try and facilitate their return. She also went to Malaysia or somewhere in Asia to facilitate their departure, by the way. She waved goodbye to the kids. Ta-da, Nana's going back to Australia. You have good luck in Syria, holding those heads up in your right hand. I mean, if the mother comes back, she should be prosecuted. But I'm blowed if I know what happens to the children. There's a teenage daughter there, a 13 or 14-year-old, who apparently was betrothed to some 30-year-old lunatic. What happens to her? I mean, this is a dysfunctional family from head to toe. And as Miranda Devine says today, I wouldn't want my children at school sitting next to the children of Islamic State head chopper Khalid Sharif. We've seen Sharif's Twitter picture last year of his oldest boy, then seven, holding the severed head of a Syrian soldier, and captioned, that's my boy. And what, they're supposed to come back here, go and live with Nana if Mum's prosecuted and goes to jail, and just return to normal life? How does a seven-year-old who carries a severed head around return to normal life? Apart from many other things, I'll talk to the Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton, in our studio in Sydney about all of that later this morning. He'll be in as well a little bit later. The Prime Minister, the front page of The Australian says, has opened the door on same-sex marriage or same-sex vote. He's cleared the ground for a parliamentary decision on same-sex marriage that can be owned by all sides of politics, and he's rebuked Bill Shorten for using the diverse or divisive issue, I should say, to mount a partisan attack. I mean, he's just grandstanding, poor old Bill. And, you know, it will be a conscience vote, and probably after what happened in Ireland, we're moving closer to it being accepted in this nation when it wasn't accepted back in 2012 when politicians last voted on it. Now, this pedophile priest, Gerald Ridsdale, we had part of it on air. It would turn your stomach. It would absolutely turn your stomach. But when push came to shove, it appears Cardinal George Pell may be the biggest winner in the evidence. Because when he was asked about what happened, he couldn't remember. I mean, the problem you have with, you know, someone like this creature, if he told you it was raining, you'd have to go outside and check. So whether he clears priests or, you know, says, Bishop, One of the bishops involved, Ronald Mulkerns, was responsible for knowing he was there and he was a recidivist offender and all the rest of it. I mean, you've got to take it with a grain of salt. I don't think in his miserable existence he's told the truth too often. His whole life's been a lie. He preyed on little children while supposedly being their spiritual guidance. I mean, he's just a... You know, if he dies tomorrow, I wouldn't imagine there'd be too many shedding a tear for this horrible, horrible creature. You know, who at 81 says, oh, I can't remember what happened there. He seems slightly confused and tired. And it says here, a report by John Ferguson out of Victoria, it seemed to be a carefully staged managed appearance from an old bloke who's got nothing to lose. He certainly has nothing to lose, that's for sure. He surrenders all right to dignity and to any sympathy whatsoever for his abhorrent behaviour. In sport, well, finally, it's taken the FBI to hold FIFA to account. It's in turmoil. A criminal investigation that goes back a couple of decades. 9 FIFA officials and 5 sports executives have been arrested in Switzerland on suspicion of being involved in more than $150 million in bribes. I think all the FIFA officials took the view that it's only a rort if you're not involved. So one by one they got involved, including vice presidents. They face extradition back to the US on corruption charges. All that the FBI are doing at the moment is confirming our worst fears. FIFA is without doubt the most corrupt sporting organisation on the planet, bar none. Queensland over New South Wales by 11 points to 10. The crowd was massive, 80,122. One sighting, Trent Merrin for a dangerous throw on Thurston. He'll not miss any football if he takes the early guilty plea. There'll be 3 Australians in the third round of the French Open. Sam Stosur won overnight. 6-love, 6-1 against her French opponent. She'll now face Maria Sharapova. Nick Kyrgios is there. And Bernard Tomic is there as well. In relation to the players who took part last night, they're undergoing medicals right now before they return to their respective clubs. We'll talk about other sport as well through the course of the morning. If you'd like to call me, 131873 is the open line number. You can email me at 2gb.com, rayhadley.com, 4bc.com.au and get podcasts, videos and program content by going to facebook.com/The Ray Hadley Morning Show. I'm Ray Hadley on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC and stations on the Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Network.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for AustralianFleetSales.com.au.
At Rose Bay, we have this serious mess. New South Head Road at Kent Road. Now, traffic is slow in both directions. Eastbound traffic is being directed onto O'Sullivan Road. Westbound traffic getting through. Anzac Bridge, still rather busy. Citybound, also the M5 past King George's Road. Mascot, Southern Cross Drive, heavy as you make your up towards the Moore Park area. Fairford Road is slow northbound over Canterbury Road. And Cullen-Bullen Roadworks on the Castlereagh Highway. And the speed there is down to 40 kilometres. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Don't miss the HSC and Careers Expo. Over 140 exhibitors and 100 seminars. On now until Sunday, Moore Park. Visit hscandcareers.com.au.
It's 23 past 9 on the network through 2GB in Sydney, 4BC in Brisbane and 2CC in Canberra. Partly cloudy in 23 in Sydney. A shower or two tomorrow, they're saying. Sunny on Saturday, mostly sunny on Sunday. A bit of rain possible on the 1st of June, the first day of winter on Monday. Penrith 23, Liverpool 22, Richmond 23, Parramatta 22, Campbelltown 22. Now, partly cloudy for Brisbane and 24, a bit warmer than it was yesterday. 25 tomorrow, partly cloudy, mostly sunny for the big race day at Doomben on Saturday, 27. 27 Sunday, and a bit of rain about on the 1st of June in Brisbane. The airport today, maximum 23, Ipswich 24, same as Logan, Redcliffe 22, and the two coasts, Sunshine and Gold Coast, both at 24 degrees. Canberra, possible rain there today, maximum of 16 degrees. In Port Macquarie, morning fog, partly cloudy, 22. The same for Kempsey, 23. Coffs Harbour, 22. Wagga Wagga rain increasing, 16. Griffith rain, 18. Goulburn, possible showers, 17. Cooma, possible showers, 17. Jindabyne, rain at times, 13. Orange, rain at times, 13. Bathurst, oh, I've got a terrible story coming out of Bathurst, by the way. Dear, oh dear, I told you yesterday about these two young people dying in that crash. And they've been in contact with me, 2BS, to tell me that the two people killed and two others injured were travelling to a funeral for a friend had also been killed in a road accident. Four people travelling in the Ford Festiva on the Great Western Highway veered off the road at 10:20 p.m, and that would have been on Tuesday night. The driver, Troy Lincoln, 24, passenger Rebecca May, the 31, survived, but passengers Claudia Chown, 18, was killed instantly, and Jake Chaffee pulled from the crash but died after arriving in hospital yesterday morning. And they were heading to Young to get away Tumut tomorrow for their friend's funeral, who passed away in a car accident last week. So two young people dead on their way to the funeral for another person killed in a car accident. Dear, oh dear. Anyway, back we go to Bathurst. Shower or two, 16 the maximum. Lithgow, possible late shower, 15. Bowral, Southern Highlands, partly cloudy, 17. And we look at Mildura, possible showers, and 21. Now, I don't think there's any rain. Oh, maybe on the coast, Maribyrnong-Harvey Bay, bit of rain about there, 25 and 24. Townsville, maybe showers developing up there, 28. Charters Towers, partly cloudy, 28. Toowoomba atop at 20. Kingaroy, 23. All sunny the rest. Charleville 27, the Isa Cloncurry 31, Longreach 29, Emerald 28, Roma 26, Wallumbilla the same, Dalby 24, St George 24, Gundawindi 24, and Cunnamulla sunny and 27 degrees. 131873 is that open line number, 2gb.com. Click onto the feedback icon, 26 past 9. Good to have your company. By the way, I'll be talking to Dan Nolan from A Current Affair shortly, because Maurice Van Ryan is facing more charges. He was due to be sentenced, the paedophile from the south coast of New South Wales, next month. That may now be delayed. He's in court today, I'm told. You might remember on Monday I spoke about an article in the Central Western Daily from Orange, and it was greatly concerning. It was about a 43-year-old Orange foster mother who spat on a police officer after she made a male companion arrested for and then completed 100 hours or 150 hours of community service. Terry Lucas, the magistrate, said that police are there for community. They don't expect to be spat on. And then he spoke about her having a cannabis and alcohol problem, or her lawyer did, rather, causing his client to show a lack of impulse control. Now, Mr. Lucas told the court she was fortunate in the way her defence was put to the court. Mr. Madden has saved you because I could have sent you to jail. Now, Terry Lucas is a really good magistrate. But Terry, I think you've been hoodwinked here, because the story is predicated on this woman, the 43-year-old woman, being a foster mother. Now, I said, how would a woman like this be a foster mother? I wanted to find out more about it from the New South Wales Minister for Family and Community Services, Brad Hazzard, about the checks required to become a foster carer. I also wanted to know at what point your position as a foster carer could be revoked based on criminal behaviour. Now, the minister's office has come back to me, and it's rather disturbing. They say the woman involved in this matter is not currently registered with the Department of Family and Community Services or any non-government organisation as a foster carer. In fact, they say she has never been registered as a foster carer. Now, I obviously can't talk to the magistrate, but given the magistrate said she was fortunate in the way her defence was put to the court, Mr. Madden's her lawyer, Michael Madden, because I could have sent you to jail. What we need to ask Mr. Lucas is, did he in any way impact his decision, or was his decision impacted in any way by the fact that she said she was a foster mother? Because apparently she's not a foster mother. So we're more than happy to pass that on to the local court in Orange, because we'd hate to think that a really good magistrate like Terry Lucas has been dutted. I mentioned earlier former Bega Cheese boss Maurice Van Ryan has been charged with more serious child sex offences. The convicted paedophile was due to be sentenced next month over a number of attacks on children. He pleaded guilty to 7 counts of indecent assault, 2 counts of indecency, and 1 of aggravated indecent assault, and, of course, a count of assault with indecency. He also pleaded guilty to the most serious charge of persistent sexual abuse of a child. His victims were aged between 8 and 16. The offences took place between 2004 and last year. And as I've told you previously, one of the offences were committed while Van Ryan was actually on bail. We worked hard to get his bail revoked. I believe sentencing for these offences has now been delayed after another victim came forward. I've spoken previously to A Current Affair reporter Dan Nolan, who's been doing an outstanding job following the Van Ryan family. He's on the line. Dan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ray.
Take us through the new charges as you understand it.
Yeah, well, these charges, he's appearing in court this morning in Sydney on these charges. Now, they all relate to one male complainant under 16 years of age. Mm. Now, this is a new victim who's come forward, possibly due to some of the wide coverage that Van Ryan's previous offending has been getting.
Right.
Now, the new charges are two counts of indecent assault of a person under 16, two of assault with active indecency, then the most serious charges, three aggravated sexual assault with a victim under the age of 16, and two counts of sexual intercourse without consent. Now, previously, Van Ryan has faced charges similar to this that were then eventually, some of those were actually rolled into that one major, you know, charge of...
Which is a 25-year sentence, the persistent sexual abuse, I think, if my
correct,
memory...
Correct, correct. Now, he's appearing in Central Local Court this morning in Sydney, where and we don't yet know whether he's pleading guilty to these. He's pleaded guilty to all the charges previously. But these matters have just come forward just in the last few weeks.
Because you have been following this from the word go, is there any talk of more victims still to come forward?
Look, Ray, it's a huge possibility. I mean, this guy has admitted to being an out of control for a number of years, and there's a huge concern within the community of Bega that there are other people who may well come forward, the people who may have left town and that are, you know, that have tried to move on, that may still yet come forward. So now what we have is the sentencing for his previous matters has now been delayed. It was due to be held on June 17. That's now been that's now going to be a mention only until they probably work in these new matters today, depending on what he pleads, obviously. It's quite possible there could be more delays again, depending on who else may come forward.
Okay, I mentioned earlier this week, and again, you might be able to help me here, that the victims' families were outraged after an application to film the actual sentencing of Maurice Van Ryan was knocked back by the trial judge in the district court, Judge Clive Jeffries. Now, for people that don't understand, the Supreme Court did it last year, early this year. Legislation was passed so that the sentencing remarks of the trial judge can be telecast. And that doesn't mean that any victims will be identified because the camera is trained on the trial judge and no one else. Not even the perpetrator is identified in these trials. Can you shed any more light on this for me?
Well, yes. So we made an application for that, and most times it is approved. But this time we had to have our own legal counsel apply for that last week, and it was knocked back. Now the families, or at least one of the families of the victims of Maurice Van Ryan, are very unhappy about this, and they say that the person who's most protected by not having this decision videotaped and broadcast is the perpetrator. And that's Maurice Van Ryan. Now, they wanted the judge's decision televised so that the true extent of his offending would be made widely available to the general public. Mm. And in their words, they said yet again, Maurice Van Ryan is protected from public scrutiny. And, you know very well what sort of a charmed run he was having through the justice system last year when, you know, it started off with him having a suppression order on his name, even though he wasn't related to any of the victims, which it was a very unusual thing to be put on from his first court appearances. And then he was granted bail after pleading guilty to all of those counts, and even one of those offences, as you mentioned earlier, was committed while he was on bail, and he was still on bail. So the families believe that he still is getting favours through the justice system that he doesn't deserve. They want that decision videotaped and broadcast, but at the moment, that won't be happening.
Okay, Dan, we'll look forward to more reports on The Current Affair. Thanks for joining us today.
No worries, Ray. Thank you.
Dan Nolan, a reporter with The Current Affair on the Nine Network. 131873 is that open line number, 2GB.com. Click onto the feedback icon. World number 8, Jason Day, has withdrawn from this week's USPGA Byron Nelson Championship. He's suffering with dizzy spells, and this affected him during the Pro-Am earlier in the week. He's a winner of the event in 2010 and was one of the favourites for the event. He's been experiencing the problem in recent weeks and wants to find a cause before next month's US Open. He's going home to Columbus to consult with his own doctors. They withdrew from last year's World Cup or World Golf Championship Invitational with vertigo, but that was linked to some side effects from medicine he was taking for a thumb injury. He doesn't have the same thumb injury. He's not taking the same medicine. So he's going back to see the doctor to see exactly what is happening. It's 22 and a half minutes to 10. It's good to have your company. 131873 is that open line number. 2GB.com, 4BC.com.au. G'day, Daniel.
Hey, Ray. How are you going?
Well, Dan, what's happening?
No, great call last night, by the way.
Thank you, mate.
That's fine. Hey, I received two speeding fines in the last 3 weeks, and both had to do with the Lane Cove Tunnel.
Two of them, did you say? Sorry, Dan.
Yeah, two.
Okay, buddy,
exactly
what happened?
Right. And I was looking at just this morning because I wanted to do the right thing and pay for it, but I was quite upset with myself for doing that at the same time. And it said it was 71 kilometres an hour, and I sort of blinked in my head and said, The Lane Cove Tunnel is an 80-kilometre road. It's an 80-kilometre sort of speed.
It is indeed.
Through there. And so I was sort of bringing my head. And so I called up State Recovery and sort of thing. And they said they can vary the speed limit and vary the speeding camera within there at any stage
they can. Well, Dan, just for my edification, what time were both the fines imposed on you?
About 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So on the way home from work, I've been driving on that road for about, I don't know, 5-10 years now and never received one fine. But all of a sudden I've been done twice, and I haven't been done since I was 19. I'm now 32, and haven't done anything wrong.
Well, Dan,
and suddenly,
the only thing I can say to you, because I travel at the other end of the day, right? Closer to 5 in the morning, usually about 4:30, I go through the Lane Cove Tunnel.
Mm.
Quite often, it's down to 40 because what they do, forget roadworks, where it might be, down to 60 or 40. If there's an incident in the tunnel. In other words, a breakdown or a lane's closed, they'll press a button in the control centre and reduce the speed immediately because someone's in the... So the fact that it varies is not a surprise to me because I'd say that, once or twice a month, it varies when I'm going through there. And there are many, many signs, overhead signs, that illustrate the speed that you're required to go. So it's a variable speed limit depending on the conditions of the road and the traffic conditions inside the tunnel.
Yep.
So, well, what was the limit? What was it back to 60 when you were doing 71?
It came down to 60, so they said that I've been done for 10 kilometres over the speed limit.
The only thing I'd say to you, Daniel, you're lucky it wasn't down to 40, son, otherwise you'd be walking at the moment.
Yeah, and my thing was just more so that on the Pacific Highway there's speed cameras on the M4, there's speed cameras, and whenever the traffic has to bump down to, if it's on the Pacific Highway down to 40 or something like that, they don't vary the speed camera on there. They vary the speed limit. Within the Lane Cove Tunnel, they've got this rule to themselves.
No, not really. They can't do it because they haven't got control of the Lane Cove Tunnel, or they've got control of it like they haven't got control of the ones you talk about. Dan, you sound like a reasonable young fella in all of these cases, and I'm not without sin, okay?
Yep.
I'm not without sin. I get filthy on myself, and then I pay it, and I get more filthy on myself for being dumb and not paying attention. I can only subscribe to the theory that on the day in question, the signs were there, but because you go through there every day of your life at 80, you weren't aware of the signs.
Yeah, and like I said, I must have done my best because I dropped down to 70 pretty quick, but obviously not down to 60. And to drop down 20 kilometres.
How many points have you done with the two of them? A couple of points?
Yeah, so one each.
One each.
I mean, I had a full deck. So
well, the good news is you've got 11 left, son. Don't lose any more.
All right.
Thanks, mate. But it's not a surprise to me because they vary the speed, not just in that tunnel, but other tunnels as well. I'm not without sin. I go to Brisbane, as you know, regularly, and I was in the tunnel from the airport into town. And when we come back from calling the football on a Friday night, we leave the hotel at about 4:45 to get a 6 o'clock flight. And so I got pinged at about 4:55. I was 11 over the same as you. It was 1 point. And I was either doing 81 in a 70 zone or 91 in an 80 zone or 71 in a 60 zone. I can't remember. But they do vary as well, Dan. And I was filthy when I got it. But when I had a look at the time and I had a couple of the boys in the car with me... who were coming back to the airport with me. We were probably deep in conversation about the game the night before, and I wasn't paying attention. And for that, you pay a price. And unfortunately, you've paid one as well. 131873 is that open line number, 2gb.com. I got an email from a listener. Thank you for your rather strong words about the use of mobile phones by drivers. Almost lost my life to a driver fiddling with his mobile phone back in October 2013. I received massive injuries, spent a total of 7 months in hospital, and now face a lifetime of restrictions as a result. my friend sitting next to me in the back seat of the car died. The devastation on both families is indescribable. The sentence was pathetic. Less time in jail than I have spent in hospital. Is anybody's phone call or text message worth someone else's life? I see it happening every day. I then asked the person involved, who now resides on the central coast of New South Wales, to give me more details. She did. It happened just south of Cairns in North Queensland. She identified the other driver, Sonobi Mark Godfrey, and the details of what happened. She had massive injuries. Another person was killed. February 13 this year, Zanobi Mark Godfrey was charged in the Cairns District Court with dangerous operating or interfering with the operation of a vehicle causing death or grievous bodily harm. He pleaded guilty. The offence, a fatal car accident, occurred October 2013, so all the information provided by my listener was correct. He was sentenced to 3 years in jail to be suspended after serving a period of just 5 months. He must not commit another offence punishable by imprisonment within a period of 3 years to avoid being dealt with for the suspended term of imprisonment. He was also disqualified just for 2 years from the 13th of February this year. Taken into account were these other offences. On February 20, 2014, which was 4 months after the fatal car accident in October 2013, Godfrey pleaded guilty and was fined for the charge of driving a motor vehicle, a tram, a train or a vessel without relevant drug, or while relevant drug present in the blood or saliva. He was sentenced at the Tully Magistrates Court. They confirmed Godfrey had been taking marijuana while driving. That was 4 months after he killed someone and left this listener in a terrible condition. On the 24th of April 2014, he was fined ex parte because it didn't appear in court for contravening a direction or requirement of police where he didn't provide fingerprints, blood tests, etc. And again, the Tully Magistrates Court. Given that he was sentenced in February, he's just about out. He took a life, and as my emailer says, is anybody's phone call or text worth someone else's life? The time is 12 to 10.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for AustralianFleetSales.com.au.
At Rose Bay, we have this serious mass, New South Head Road at Kent Road. Now, traffic is fairly busy in both directions. Eastbound traffic is being directed onto O'Sullivan Road and then Old South Head Road. Westbound traffic, that citybound traffic, is getting past. Fairford Road still rather busy, northbound around Canterbury Road onto Stacey Street. M5 underspeed eastbound King George's Road down to the tunnel. Mascot Southern Cross Drive is slow, city bound, and 28 kilometres west of Lithgow, Cullumbyn Roadworks on the Castlereagh Highway. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Get a better plate with Numbers First personalised plates. Order yours for just $99 per year plus a one-off order fee. Visit myplates.com.au.
Terry from Warunga said, thank you, Ray, and the team for a wonderful State of Origin Girls Night Out. We love it. Thank you very much, Terry. It was nice to meet you last night as well, along with all the other girls. Mary says, my sincere thanks for a great night out State of Origin last night. Having never watched a footy game or even attended one, it was quite an education with the girls and the Girls Night Out. Point out the finer points. Good on you, Mary. An old mate of mine, Alan Sullivan, QC, dropped me a note. We have the pleasure of Alan's son working with us in the Macquarie Radio Network. He's one of our sales executives, Anthony. I didn't know this, but Anthony has undergone surgery at Royal North Shore to repair a ruptured ACL, MCL in his right knee and a broken tibia, sustained the result of a fall at basketball last week. So one of our top salespeople, Anthony Sullivan's going to be out of action for a while. Anthony, we're thinking of you, son. Get back here as quickly as you possibly can. 131873 is that open line number, 2GB.com. Warren, hello.
Good morning. Ray, the first-time caller and your neighbour. I live in Glenora, you live in Dural.
Good on you, mate.
Beautiful part of the country.
It is.
Listen, I travel 7 days a week through the M2
yes.
and the Lenkhof Tunnel. On one particular day last year, I received 4 fines through Lenkhof Tunnel saying, I was being 70-something and yet you're 60.
How many? So five? Did you say four?
Four in one day, my friend. So I travel in the morning. I get up early, 4:30, to go to work. I work in Alexandria, business in Alexandria. I live in Glenorie.
Yeah.
And I rang them and I argued with them. Eventually, I went to internet, had a look at the picture. They have, you know, the photo. It was 60. So I copied this with my friend. So tell all the fellows just to relax. It, you know, at the end of the day, who are you going to complain?
Well, if you make a blue, Warren, it'd be nice if everyone took it in the spirit in which you've taken it. Thank you very much for that. 131873 is that open line number, 2GB.com. Click onto the feedback icon if you would like to join us. Pick up the phone, dial the number, and have your say. Look, Stephanie Boris, who works in Canberra for us now, but used to work with me in Sydney on the Ray Hadley Morning Show, now follows the Prime Minister and other politicians around as our Canberra Bureau correspondent. And she tells me that yesterday, when they had the small business interviews in and around Canberra, that the Prime Minister went to a butcher shop in Kippax called Elite Meats. And the boys at Elite Meats in Kippax noticed that Steffi had a microphone from the Macquarie Radio Network and said, "Do you work with Ray?" And she said, "Yes." So to Wes Dempsey and James Skipper from Elite Meats, listening to us through 2CC at the moment, thank you, boys. You know I love butchers, and it's really nice to know that you listen to us while you're plying your trade down there at Kippax at Elite Meats. A story coming out of the southern part of New South Wales where we do broadcast to. A house has been destroyed and a man is missing following a fire north of Wagga Wagga this morning. At about 12:45, emergency services were alerted to a house on fire at Coolerman, about 43K north of Wagga Wagga. Now, firefighters and Fire Rescue New South Wales and the Rural Fire Service attended. The premises well alight. The fire was put out, but the building was destroyed. The only person living on the property, a 68-year-old man, has not been found. A canvas of the man's neighbours and family, unable to determine if he was home at the time. Police have now advised the man's family it's not looking good. The building is still too dangerous to enter. Investigators will search the scene once it's deemed safe later today. The cause of the fire is unknown, and I guess the family are expecting to hear the worst possible news. TV ratings for the Rugby League last night on the Nine Network in Sydney, massive. At 8.15 when it started, 1 million. 1.1, 1.1 million, 1 million, 980,000, 1.1, 1.1 and 1 million. In Brisbane, started with 440,000, 580, 720, 824, 811, 760, 678, 774, 785 and 791, making it a massive, massive audience. A national coverage, according to Channel 9, of 3.6 million. 3.6 million on average. Across the entire country. So it'll be staying Wednesday night, I'd imagine.
Oh, it's so nice to be with you. I love all the things you say and do. And it's so nice to hear you, Ray. You're gonna be here every day. It's the best information. I'm locked on the station and this show. Down, you're there to pick me up and help me to carry on. Oh, the little things mean a lot, and I need a shoulder to cry on. You're there to ease the pain and chase away the rain. Oh, Hadley, I just gotta say, oh, it's so nice to be with you. I love all the things you say and do. And it's so nice to hear you, Ray. You're gonna be here every day. It's the best information. I'm locked on your station. Here's in the know. 9 till 12's the duration. It's all around the nation. Hadley Show.
And welcome back. Second hour of the program. Very shortly, Immigration Minister Peter Dutton. There's a stack of things to talk about. Our regular Thursday chat with the Immigration Minister. I've just been raided here by the one of the mentors for the Queensland State of Origin side, who gives them a pep talk before they give it to New South Wales like they did last night, albeit by a small margin, 11-10, Alan Jones, wearing his Queensland scarf. I did get an email about, and I get these all the time, and they are infuriating. Good game, says David from Dalgetty in the southern part of New South Wales. My enjoyment was soured by the continual mispronunciation of the Queensland colour maroon as maroon. There's no such word. Well, unfortunately for you, David, this is a debate that I've had for quite a number of years, and they're the maroons to me and the maroons to many others and maroons to others. But unfortunately for you, the Oxford Concise Talking Dictionary says both maroon and maroon are acceptable. It's called common usage. And while you may find it distasteful, I'm afraid, my friend, that they are the maroons as far as I'm concerned. I'll find out what the Queensland Minister for Immigration thinks. Maroons or maroons? Peter Dutton, good morning.
Good morning, Ray, definitely. Definitely maroons. Kevin, and I'll tell you why, because Kevin Rudd used to call it maroons all the time. So that should put his mind at rest.
Well, there you go. And there were other prime ministers that used to mispronounce other words as well. but we won't go into that. Now, we've got a very eventful day today. And I don't know how you deal with these problems as a government, let alone as a minister. And I'm talking about Nettleman, Tara Nettleman, her children, and her husband, who's a terrorist. The reports say, and obviously we don't know the full details, that the grandmother has travelled to Malaysia, to Karen Nettleton, to facilitate the return. I might also mention that the same Mrs. Nettleton facilitated the departure by travelling with the family to Asia before they made their way to the Middle East. But Tara Nettleton's one thing. The Prime Minister had already enunciated that anyone returning from that place will feel the full weight of the law. But how do you reintroduce small children into a community where everyone finds it abhorrent that a seven-year-old is given a head, a decapitated head, to display on social media? I mean, I don't know where you start and where you finish, Minister.
Well, Ray, it's pretty clear-cut in my mind in terms of the parents, so leave that to one side.
Sure.
But in terms of the kids, if they committed an offence against Australian law, if they're of that age, which it seems in this case they're not, but just talking generically, if they're old enough to be charged here with an offence and they've committed that overseas, they've engaged in terrorism otherwise, then they'd face the Australian law like any other child or teenager would. When you're talking about infants and young kids, it's pretty hard to imagine how they can lead a normal life again. And no doubt, as any grandparent would be, this grandparent's beside herself. And the full facts of the case, I don't know. But the reality is that these parents have destroyed the lives of these kids. They could never lead a normal life. And in the end, you need to make a judgment about what support you can provide to kids. Clearly, they've demonstrated that they don't have the capacity to parent. And I think the authorities, whatever state is the applicable state, they'll face big consequences when they get back.
See, there's other stories coming out of Syria that the boys are the youngest of a family of five children. But there were teenage girls there, 13, one of them, who's been promised or betrothed to a 30-year-old ISIS fighter. I mean, and she's still a child in the eyes of the law and the eyes of this Australian community.
But this is what our troops are fighting. Right. I mean, this is why we're training up the army in Iraq at the moment and trying to defeat this death cult, because this is the barbaric savagery that they practice. And they're raping and pillaging their way across the Middle East. They're getting support from God knows where in terms of financing and fundraising to buy tanks and guns and the rest of it. And they need to be stopped. They need to be stopped before they spread their message any further. And the difficulty in this modern age is that they reach out to why young girls in particular would answer this call, I mean, it's beyond anybody's comprehension.
Well, I think in this young girl's case, the mother took her back there. The father's a raving lunatic. And when you're 13 and you're brought up in that environment, you're compliant. You do what your parents tell you. And if part of that is surrendering to a 30-year-old man to be his wife, you do exactly what your parents tell you, and she doesn't have a say in it, I guess.
Well, as I say, I think some of these matters be tested by authorities when they return if they're not killed over there in the first instance.
Now, I noticed on the front page of The Australian today, Sheikh Tajuddin Al-Halali has spoken. He's warned there are potentially thousands of young Australians willing to join Islamic State. Now, the Sheikh doesn't have a lot of credibility with me and many others because of the way he carried on when he, in fact, was the Grand Mufti, including comparing women who were preyed on by men because they were scantily clad as uncovered meat. He says he warned the Howard government about the risk of this creeping radicalisation. Is there any credibility attached to whatever this bloke says?
Well, right, it's like saying, the bloke has gone out and raped somebody or murdered somebody because, you know, he's had a rough upbringing or his father wasn't employed or some other circumstance. In the end, people should be held to account for their actions, regardless of their race or creed. They answer the law equally in this country, and that's the reality. Now, there are other voices out there in the community at the moment, in the Muslim community, who are calling this savagery for what it is, and they're trying to say to young people, don't answer the call, and I think they're the people that we should be paying attention to, and the loud voice will always, squeaky wheel will always get the attention, no doubt. But I think most most people want to hear from the sensible voices within the Muslim community, and there are some good voices out there.
Kylie has phoned in and says, why doesn't the government shut ISIS down on the web? Stop them getting money. Well, they can't. I mean,
they just can't, mate.
The government doesn't control the web, Kylie. It's not as if the government says, look, 2GB can't have a website or someone else can't have a website.
No, and one of the things that that we know this death cult do well is social media. Some estimates say that they put out between 90,000 and 100,000 messages a day. Now, obviously, the US and us, the Brits, Canadians, others would be no doubt trawling around online to see what sites you could close down. But as soon as you're closing one down, another pops up, and it's just impossible to close it down.
I'm interested in this so-called split in cabinet. It says 30 to 50% of Australians fighting in Syria are believed to be dual citizens, so citizens of a country in the Middle East and citizens of Australia. Now, I'm just not quite sure. Are people in cabinet arguing against the fact that we'll revoke their citizenship while they're still a citizen of another nation, or is it more about the second generational terrorists we're talking about, where we say they're stateless? I mean, are there actually some people in government arguing that we shouldn't take the citizenship of dual citizens away? Are there people arguing that point?
Well, just to deal with the story first, Ray. So this story appeared online. It was a mischievous story, and it was run by one journalist. And regrettably, a number of journalists then pick the story up and run with it as if it's fact.
Right.
The fact is that there was a discussion in cabinet, as you would expect, about how the powers would work, what safeguards are in place, who it is that would be captured by it. The cabinet came to a decision where we supported stripping of citizenship from dual nationals, providing people wouldn't be rendered stateless, which is what we'd intended to do, and that the second part of it, in terms of taking citizenship away from somebody, making sure that they're not stateless, but in the circumstance where they were able to apply for citizenship elsewhere. So that's the second part of what the UK do. We've put that into the discussion paper, which Philip Ruddock's leading, which was our intent. So there was a discussion cabinet agreement there, and I can tell you when we went to the party room on Tuesday, there was overwhelming support, and I just think members are representing their electorates. And that is that people want us to act against those that would seek to do us harm.
I think you're probably right. There's a story in the Courier Mail today about a raid by immigration and customs officials in the Lockyer Valley, west of Brisbane. 22 alleged illegal workers have been detained. Can you tell me about that and where these people come from?
Yeah, there was a series of raids across the country yesterday, and it was targeting illegal workers. A lot of farmers have great difficulty in getting workers to pick fruit. As we know, it rots on the vine or the tree or in the ground, and they are desperate to get workers. Now, the trouble is that some of these labour hire companies, it seems, are exploiting this. They're using, in some cases, illegal workers.
Now, are these the same one that reported in the ABC program?
Yeah, there was a report a couple of weeks ago, and so there'll be a lot more enforcement activity because, in the end, most employers are doing the right thing, but those who are doing the wrong thing, we're going to clamp down on, and the same for the hire companies. So there were 38 in total across the country that were picked up yesterday as illegal workers, including 37 from Malaysia. So we're working through what visas they would have been on. They might have been on a student visa, for example, but they've been taken into custody because they've acted outside of their arrangements, and in some of those cases, those visas will be cancelled and people will be sent back home.
After our discussion on Tuesday, I think, about what happened at Villawood Detention Centre, and while you can't tell me about operational matters, I take it that the five people, particularly two ringleaders, have been removed from Villawood and put elsewhere. I received some correspondence yesterday, which is a cheat sheet from Serco, and obviously I can't disclose where I got it from. The two ringleaders particularly, and one of them I spoke to you about, these are people, the crimes they commit, the way they conduct themselves whilst incarcerated, both in jails or in detention at Villawood, these are very dangerous criminals. Very dangerous criminals who have threatened Serco guards, have threatened the families of Serco guards. And how it came to light that I publicised that they were on drugs, there was a social media posting, the one with the muscle-bound bikey lookalikes, celebrating the power they enjoyed inside Villawood. And it appears to me, despite the fact they're incarcerated and should be kept under strict control, they basically have the run of the place and are able to post things on social media via mobile phones, either smuggled in or given to them in some way, shape or form. why is it taking so long, and I know it must be frustrating for everyone, including us, for the government to actually get these palookas back where they came from so they're out of our hair?
Well, the reality, Ray, and I can tell you I feel the same frustration on a daily basis. The reality is that some of them are caught up in the courts appealing against the decision that we've made to deport them. Now, you referred to a couple of cases. I've had a look at some of the information in relation to these people where they have been involved in activities, assaulting guards, destroying property, and I've said to you before, and as I've made very clear to the department, we will not tolerate any of it. These people have committed offences, serious offences in our country. They have been held because we've cancelled their visas and they're on a pathway to go back to where they came. Now, we go through the courts and they tie it up there for a while. That's their legal right to do so. That's fine. But what we've implemented now is that we're going to look more closely at the way in which these people are managed, because I don't want our guards assaulted. I don't want other people in the detention centres assaulted. I don't want Commonwealth property destroyed. And we are going to use Christmas Island, which is a more hardened facility, to accommodate people. We're working with the state governments where there's capacity within their jail network. If somebody's come out of jail, if they're a murderer, member of an outlaw motorcycle gang involved in extortion and assaults, they've served their jail term and we've cancelled their visa so that they return back to another country. If they've been in high security prison environments, it's pointless keeping them in some sort of a softer surround, thinking that they've improved their ways, that they're going to respect the guards and the rule of law. They're on their way out and we'll deal with that as quickly as we can. But I've got the reality of dealing with the process through the courts, which, as I say, is appropriate, but it's frustrating.
Can I just put this to you? This document I've got, a Serco document, intel document, and I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I'd get hold of it if I were you, so that you can actually see what I've seen, the sort of people that the guards out there are dealing with. There was a really embarrassing moment when Chris Bowen was sitting exactly where you are today, and I revealed to him a number of years ago that a device had been detonated at Villawood. And he said, no, that wouldn't be right. I'd know about it if there was some sort of device, a bomb, or, you know, it'd be, anyway, by the end of the program, it came to light. I was right. The minister knew nothing about it. Now, you and I have had a number of conversations on and off air about what's going on at Villawood. Would you like to be better informed by Serco? Do you think Serco tried to manage things and, you know, caress things a little so that it doesn't come to the minister's attention, so that they don't look like they're not in control?
Look, Ray, I think they want to deal with it. And I think there's a combination of them wanting to deal with it and also being frustrated because the population within the detention centres is changing dramatically. Now, as we've stopped the boats, the boat people aren't going into detention. The number of people in detention is increasing because we're cancelling visas of criminals and people convicted of offences, serious offences. Now, as that population hardens, Serco and others need to recognise that they need to deal in a different way with these people who are hardened criminals. And we've had that conversation, and Serco have been given instruction in relation to this, as other providers have. We have, from the 1st of July, under the Australian Border Force, as it will then be known, instead of Customs and Border Protection, new commanders across regions who will have a much greater say in the way in which these centres are managed. And as I say, it's a zero tolerance, and we are clamping down on it in a way that hasn't been seen in years. There are raids that are taking place, that have taken place in the last couple of days in the centres to deal with these people, and we will clean it up.
Are those blokes gone now from Silverwater?
Yes, they are.
They're no longer there?
They're not there.
Are they a long way away from family members in Sydney?
They are on their way to, or they've arrived at, an island remote from here, and we will be encouraging them to return back to the place that they've come from. And
well, that might, you see, if they've gone to Christmas Island, I haven't been there, and I know from discussions I have with your predecessor, it's not a very pleasant place. That may encourage them to go back to the land of the long white cloud and other places, more idyllic than Christmas Island, if in fact that's their choice.
And we'll be happy to pay for their flights and organise the travel documents for them to go as quickly as we can, and I think some will indicate that. As I say, we're happy for everybody to abide by the rule of law, but in the end, these people have had their visas cancelled. We want them returned back to their country.
Okay, Minister, thanks as always for your time.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you very much. That's the Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton. Breaking news. Breaking news. Deputy Crown Prosecutor Margaret Kinnean has withdrawn from a murder trial in the Supreme Court in Sydney after the ICAC referred her to the organisation that employs her, being the DPP. I notice that the Minister is taking his Queensland State of Origin scarf off as he leaves the studio. He's going to present it to me, actually. I've already got four from Alan Belford, Jones the Mentor. Thank you very much, Mr. Dutton. I'll wear that when I go to Queensland. 131873 is that open line number, 2GB.com. Just repeating, Deputy Crown Prosecutor Margaret Kinnean has withdrawn from a murder trial that she started, I think, on Monday. I don't know how far advanced the trial was after the ICAC referred her to the DPP. In God's name, why didn't the ICAC give the matter for investigation to the New South Wales Police Force? As I've said previously, the DPP is a prosecutor. They are not an investigative organisation. It's just remarkable. 131873. Now, on another front, Gil Taylor has called from the Central Local Court. Maurice Van Ryan has appeared via video link from Silver Order on his new charges. No plea was entered. These charges will be mentioned in the Bega Local Court June 23rd. No mention of a new date for sentencing. It is likely to go ahead by the trial judge, District Court Judge Clive Jeffries. 24 past 10.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for AustralianFleetSales.com.au.
At Rose Bay, we still have this serious mass. New South Head Road at Kent Road. Traffic still very busy in the area. Eastbound traffic is directed onto O'Sullivan Road. Westbound traffic getting through that city bound. At North Ryde, a rear end at Epping Road. Lane 2 westbound at Mowbray Road. At Glenfield, a tarp on the M5. Northbound approaching Camden Valley Way. Now 28 kilometres out of Lithgow. Roadworks at Cullumbullen on the Castlereagh Highway. Speed down to 40 kilometres. Eastern Distributor is very heavy northbound up towards the Domain area at the moment.
Spoil yourself with $2,000 of special features at Hyundai with the i30 Active X from just 21,490 drive away. Fantastic Hyundai value. Hurry, end Sunday.
It's good to have your company. 28 past 10, the Ray Hadley Morning Show on 2GB. Of course, 4BC, 2CC and stations right across Australia. 131873 is that open line number. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, Linda.
I was wondering if you could wish my husband a happy 60th birthday.
Be delighted to. Where's your husband at the moment?
He's at home with me. He's just cleaning at the moment.
You've got him cleaning?
Yeah.
What, on his 60th birthday?
I know. We're having a party on Saturday.
What, he's getting ready for the party, is he?
Yeah.
What's his name, Linda?
Lou.
Well, Lou, all the best. Happy cleaning in the lead up to the party this weekend. And happy 60th. Your best years, as I can document, are in front of you.
Thank you very much, Ray.
That's okay, Linda. Thank you. It's nice to hear from you, and all the best to your husband, Lou. 131873. Now, this is a bizarre one. I've told you about this before. There was a story by Lima Simidar in the Daily Telegraph back early this month. And this is one of the bail cases I could never quite understand. A taxi driver would park in a secluded area and sexually abuse a profoundly deaf young girl before dropping her home. Osman Chamsuddin, 64, was on trial at Parramatta District Court last month and this month over abusing a 10 or 11-year-old deaf girl in Western Sydney. He was subcontracted to pick up and drop off the disabled children in his minivan as part of the New South Wales Department of Education service. Now, back when the trial started, the Crown Prosecutor Andrew Metcalfe claimed sexual abuse took place on four occasions. On each occasion, he accused of dropping the little girl off last, parking in a secluded place and sexually abusing her. Mr. Metcalfe said on the first occasion he asked her to sit on the front seat and then assaulted her. She tried to say stop, but she froze in fear. Anyway, the sexual assaults continued. His barrister, Michael Crawford Fish, told the jury he vehemently denied the allegations. Well, the jury has returned this morning a guilty verdict. A verdict for common sense. A verdict for justice. However, so he's guilty. In much the way that Maurice Van Ryan pleaded guilty, but somehow was given bail awaiting sentence before the then Attorney General Brad Hazzard intervened and his bail was revoked. Would you believe that his lawyer, I assume it's Michael Crawford Fish, his barrister, is currently arguing before the District Court at Parramatta for bail? He's guilty. Okay, he's guilty. Well, I want to congratulate the District Court judge, whoever that may be, because bail has just been revoked. Just that second. I was about to discuss the fact that his barrister was applying for bail despite the guilty verdict in relation to these attacks on a 10 or 11-year-old profoundly deaf girl, but the district court at Parramatta has revoked the bail of this creature, Osman Chamsuddin. He goes back into custody and he stays there awaiting sentence. As I said, a victory for common sense. 131873 is that open line number, 2gb.com. Click on the feedback icon. Sue and Jeff at Goulburn, listening to 2GN. Wonder if we could send a cheer out to our mate David Thompson from Goulburn, suffering with motor neurone disease. He's currently in the Bourke Street Health Centre and not at all well, and thought a message from you might cheer him up. He used to be a wardsman at the hospital, so he's surrounded by colleagues and friends, which is wonderful. He's a mad West Tigers fan. Well, David, I'm terribly sorry you're battling motor neurone disease and your friends are thinking of you, as I am indeed. All the best, mate. 131873 is that open line number, 2gb.com. This cyclist died, of course, at Rays Bay this morning, 7:45 a.m. in Sydney. Emergency services called to New South Head Road, where the man was trapped under the truck near the intersection of Kent Road, believed both were travelling west, the truck and the cyclist. New South Wales paramedics rendered assistance. The man died at the scene. He has not yet been identified. The driver of the truck, of course, has been taken for mandatory blood and urine test. The crash investigation unit are on the scene right now, investigating the circumstances of what happened. 131873 is the open line number, 2gb.com. Now, this has come from the Senate. The head of the Human Rights Watchdog is facing another grilling by a parliamentary committee, this time over her recommendation, this is Gillian Triggs, to pay compensation to a convicted refugee wife killer. Gillian Triggs said previously that fair-minded Australians would judge as reasonable her finding that this bloke be awarded $350,000, John Basic, for his continued attention by immigration authorities. He's a convicted wife killer. Appearing before a Senate Estimates Committee hearing, Professor Triggs refused a request from National Senator Barry O'Sullivan to release internal Human Rights Commission documents relating to the case. So the grilling there will continue. Professor Triggs opposed releasing documents on public interest immunity grounds, citing privacy and the prospect that others would be deterred from lodging complaints with the Commission. Basic already had consented to disclosure of his name and the Commission would seek his agreement to release other documents relating to the case, he said. Senator O'Sullivan also sought documents relating to the cases of complaints identified only as MG and Charlie. What a waste of taxpayer money. An absolute waste of taxpayer money. Professor Gillian Triggs thinks it's acceptable in 2015 to give $350,000 compensation to a bloke held in immigration detention after being released for jail because he's a wife killer. The woman has lost touch with reality. 26.5 to 11.
Macquarie National News.
Thank you, Natalie.
Good morning, Ray. A taxi driver's had his bail revoked after being found guilty of sexually abusing a young deaf girl in Sydney's West. Deputy Crown Prosecutor Margaret Kinnean has withdrawn from a murder trial after ICAC referred her to the DPP. The Queensland Police Force has commissioned two drones worth $23,000 to be used in the forensic search for evidence, and there'll be a review of the ABC television show Q&A following claims it has a left-leaning bias. ABC Managing Director Mark Scott wants a summary of the issues covered after the public broadcaster was mentioned in Senate estimates. In sport, the Blues say they're not ready to hand back the State of Origin Shield, hoping Captain Paul Gallen's return in Game 2 in Melbourne will help them equalise the series. Ray, more news and sport in 25 minutes.
OK, look forward to that. Thank you. For anyone that missed State of Origin from last night.
And off we go. Origin 1, 2015. Cooper Cronk dancing. The ball to Thaiday, almost through the tackle. He'll play the ball back. That's the last tackle. They go blindside. Smith got the ball to Cronk. Cronk's first try. Too easy. Oh, he went straight through them like a hot knife through butter. And Queensland lead 4-0 with a kick to come.
Fafita's warming up on the touchline and the Queensland troops are about to change as well. I think there's a change coming up. The number 15's there, Josh Maguire. He'll be up there shortly. As it's a good run. The pass back to Dugan. It came from Tamo. He's into clear space. Came to Slater. Ran into Slater. Kicking downfield. Morris after it. Takes the ball and scores a brilliant try. A magnificent New South Wales try.
Gee whiz, it was a brilliant try. Tamo out of nothing.
Barra runs across field. The ball to Hodkins. And they've got numbers out wide. Hoffman. Oh, they had three on two, but they couldn't get the arms away. He'll play it two out from the goal line. To his feet now, back the other way. Tamo, straight and hard. In centre field, he's met.
He's put down two out. Plays it back on the fourth tackle. Queensland leading 6-4. Now the ball out the back. Tamo was having a punch at someone in back play. As the ball comes to Scott, Scott's there, try. They play the ball back. Trent Merrin warming up. Slade play the ball. Way to Thurston. Out the back it comes Cooper Cronk. Then a flat pass Thaiday. Running around Slater. Great ball out to Chambers. Back on the inside. Try, try, try. Brilliantly contrived. 10-all. New South Wales, Queensland. A kick from the touchline for Thurston.
And in a flash it just all changes.
Inglis, who's tackled by Jackson. Held on the tackle now. 22 metres out from the goal line. He'll play the ball back. That's only the third tackle. They're 20 out. Now in centre field, Gillett. He goes at the defence and he's put down. 14 out from the goal line. New South Wales and Queensland 10-all. Here's the field goal. Cronk from 21 metres out. Pilots it towards the uprights and it's there. It's a goal. It's a goal. They lead by 11-10 with six to go. Queensland 11, New South Wales 10. Cooper Cronk pilots a field goal. Can a miracle get New South Wales home? They're down by a point from the base of the scrum. There's the siren. Jennings with it now. He goes across field. The ball comes out the back to Pierce. He's kicked it downfield. Straight to Darius Boyd, who throws it into the crowd. And that's full time. Queensland, ladies and gentlemen, have won the opening State of Origin game. They've won it by 11 points to 10.
Yes, that was from last night, and a great win. A great win by Queensland. And at the end of the day, the Queenslanders do what they normally do in State of Origin. They somehow grab victory from the jaws of defeat. 10-all, they look like, well, New South Wales looked like they were finishing the better. But Queensland, even with Greg Inglis having perhaps his worst rep game, with tonsillitis still probably a problem, playing dreadfully on that left-hand side at left centre. And Greg Inglis doesn't do that. He's an elite player. He's a world-class player, but he just played dreadfully last night. Even with him down on his game, the others lifted. And Cooper Cronk, just outstanding. The try that he scored, brilliant. The passage of play that saw Will Chambers score, brilliant. And then the field goal from Cooper Cronk from 21 or 22 out, equally brilliant to win the game 11-10. New South Wales had a chance to force it to golden point, and they blew it. Matt Wolfrey is at the Parramatta District Court. Osman Chamsuddin found guilty. No bail, Matt.
Yes, that's right. We've just heard that he's been found guilty of four counts of aggravated sexual assault as well as two counts of indecent assault. This, of course, relates to the abuse of a young deaf girl in 2009. While the 64-year-old was subcontracted by the Education Department to pick and drop off disabled children in his minivan, they then heard an application to continue his bail from his lawyers, but that was rejected, the judge finding that although he has turned up to court and wasn't a risk of not appearing, a custodial sentence was inevitable and it would be of a lengthy duration, and he took into account the breach of trust and the unacceptable risk that an untreated sex offender has on the community. So he's been taken away into the docks. He'll be sentenced on the 24th of July at the Downing Centre at 2 p.m.
Okay, 24th of July, you say?
Yes, that's correct, Ray.
Okay, let's hope it's a long, long sentence. The judge that revoked the bail, who was the judge, did you say?
Judge Brian Knox.
Well, he's a good bloke, and I don't know him. But I was terribly worried when I was reading the story and then the word came through, obviously, from you on the mobile that bail had been revoked. We may have been heading down a Morris Van Ryan path, but we didn't.
No, that's right. He has been taken away down into the docks today.
Good. Thank you very much, Matt. All the best. Matt Wolfrey, our police reporter in Sydney. Now, a statement from the FFA, Football Federation Australia. The FFA delegation led by David Gallop arrived in Zurich last night our time ahead of the 2015 FIFA Congress. The FFA chairman, Frank Lowy, expected to arrive in Zurich tonight, Australian time. The Australian delegation will review the developments involving Swiss and US law enforcement authorities over the conduct of FIFA officials. FFA will make a further statement tonight, I guess, after Mr. Lowy talked to Mr. Gallop. But it certainly takes a bit of gloss off what's happening there at the moment. And maybe now we'll have an honest FIFA executive in place for the first time in decades. Story from the Illawarra Mercury by Shannon Tonkin. A Corrible man has confessed to sexually abusing the six-year-old son of a woman he befriended online. Antonio Scavira, 29, was babysitting the child one evening in December of 2013 when he took advantage of the fact that they were alone, molested the boy. Oh dear, performing sexual acts on him. Scavira videotaped the incident. And another sexual act was included on the videotape. The boy's mother discovered what Scavira had done after overhearing a conversation between him and the six-year-old later that evening. She said the content of the conversation prompted her to kick Scrivira out of the house, immediately ask her son what happened. The boy told her what Scrivira had done, but the woman did not report the matter to police at the time. What? Officers only became aware of it when they uncovered the video of the sexual encounter on Scrivira's iPad while searching his home on unrelated matters in December last year. As well as the video of him and the boy, he had a further 117 videos and 479 pictures depicting child porn, 18 of which fell into the most severe category for such material. Police documents tendered to the Port Kembla local court yesterday said Scrivira and the boy's mother met through Facebook and became friends, leading to Scrivira spending time at the woman's home. She was aware the offender was immature. She felt sorry for him. She indicates that the offender became friends with her son and they played computer games together. The sexual abuse occurred one evening while Scrivira was babysitting the boy after his mother and her partner had gone out for the evening. During an interview with police in February, Scrivira admitted to performing the sexual acts and recording them in the space of a few hours. He's been remanded and in custody to be sentenced next month. The mother didn't report it. Police only got it when they went to his home on an unrelated matter. I hope the Family and Community Services people are dealing with this, and hopefully the child will be removed from the mother's care. From police media in Sydney, a man is due in court charged with multiple sex offences after a woman was allegedly attacked in Chester Hill earlier this week. Police from Rose Hill LAC have investigated the alleged sexual assault of a 24-year-old woman on Monday night. Detectives yesterday arrested a 28-year-old man and charged him with one count of taking and containing a person with intent to commit a serious indictable offence and four counts of aggravated sexual assault. The man's been refused bail. He's before Parramatta local court today. And a story out of Canberra, 2CC, and the Canberra Times tell me, a high-ranking Rebels bikie who told a club nominee he was going to kick the teeth through the back of his head over an unpaid motorcycle repair has been sentenced for serious and sustained assaults. The dispute between the pair started when the victim expressed a desire to join the Rebels. The offender, Alexander Bourne, 27, put him forward as a nominee, and another bikie, Michael David Reese, let him borrow his motorcycle. But the would-be Rebels member crashed the bike after a car suddenly pulled out in front of him, causing 16 grand worth of damage. He couldn't pay for the repairs, prompting anger from Reese, who's since passed away, and Bourne. Telephone intercepts picked up Bourne threatening the victim if he didn't pay the money back, saying the incident had made him look bad at the club. "You're lucky I don't neck you and all your family, bro. When I see you, I'm going to kick your effing teeth through the back of your head and break every bone in your body. You're going to cop it, bro." Sometime later, Reese and Bourne went to confront the victim in Gungahlin at the front of a bodybuilding and workout supplement store. Bourne noticed the victim was wearing rosary beads. He said, "Not even God will help you now." He punched him the left side of the head and again two or three times, causing the victim to fall over onto his back. Bourne then stomped his head with both feet, punching him again, kicking him, causing his head to bounce off the concrete. The attack ceased when the victim's sister and friends told them to stop. Bourne was later heard on telephone intercepts boasting about the attack, saying he was satisfied the victim had got away pretty easy. The pair were charged over the attack. Reese passed away before the case was resolved. Justice Hilary Penfold told Bourne his membership in the Rebels must cast a shadow over his future prospects of reoffending. "I'm not going to tell you to give up the Rebels. That's a decision for you." She sentenced Bourne to 14 months imprisonment, eligible for parole in August due to time already served, depending on the progress of other unrelated charges. The judge told him to think about his involvement with the Rebels, bro, while he's behind bars. Story on the front page of The Australian today. I wanted to talk to Chris Merritt, the legal affairs editor of The Australian. He's on the line. G'day, Chris.
G'day, Ray. How are you?
Good. I appreciate your time. This has taken another turn with Margaret Keneen. She's now withdrawn from the murder trial she was prosecuting, which started earlier this week. We better be careful what we say about that. We don't know whether the jury's been impaneled or what's happened there. But you write, it's hard to decide how to characterise yesterday's actions by New South Wales Corruption Watchdog. Petty, vindictive, petulant, all sound about right. I think most people would agree with you. Then you offer an explanation as to why it was done yesterday. Can you take us through that?
Yes, there's a. It's very strange, but it's got to do with the High Court challenge to the retrospective legislation that attempts to make valid ICAC's unlawful actions in the past. You'll remember that the High Court found that ICAC was exceeding its jurisdiction in the Keneen matter.
Yes.
The government passed retrospective legislation which attempts to make that valid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where it gets interesting. if that High Court challenge succeeds, ICAC would be unable to make any use, or would be unable to pass tainted, unlawfully gathered material to criminal justice authorities. But right now, while before that High Court case is heard, that material receives the benefit of the retrospective legislation, which makes it lawful. So on the back of that, the Commission yesterday told the world that it had passed that information to the DPP, but it also issued this extraordinary 622-word media release, which is the most extraordinary document I've seen for quite some time.
It's like an adverse finding saying, as you say in your article, she's already guilty of perverting the course of justice despite the fact she hasn't been charged with perverting the course of justice.
You would never, ever get police in the normal criminal justice system doing something like that. It prejudges matters before any evidence has been tested or gathered. It's quite ludicrous. There's an argument that it is a contempt of court. One of the aspects of the High Court judgment in the Canine matter was it prevented ICAC producing an adverse report and continuing with the investigation of Canine because that was way outside its jurisdiction. It didn't concern the probity, the honesty of public administration. It was a lesser standard, and they'd be extended themselves beyond that. So it's there is an argument that they're right on the borderline, I say, on whether that is contempt of the High Court or not.
Just one final thing. Time will beat us, but and you can explain as a legal affairs editor of The Australian to the rank and file, including me. The DPP are prosecutors. They're not investigators. Shouldn't the matter have been passed to the New South Wales Police by the ICAC if, in fact, they think a law's been broken?
Not just by the ICAC, but by the... what we're talking about here is material gathered by a federal agency and passed to ICAC.
Yeah.
Now, you'd have to ask the question, why did they pass it to ICAC if it was so crucial, instead of the normal criminal justice authorities, the police?
Could have been the federal police or the New South Wales State Police.
Look, the only logical... this is just a theory, but here's the theory. If that material were up to a standard where it could be used as real evidence in a court, it would have been passed to the legitimate authorities. But I suspect that it's not up to that. It might provide hints and tips.
So it's a witch hunt?
Yeah, that's how I see it.
It's a fishing expedition. Chris, thanks for your time.
You're right.
Chris Merritt, legal affairs editor at the Australian newspaper.
Rob from Queensland says, Ray, that John Bassic, the Human Rights Commissioner, recommends should get all that money. Just a reminder, not only murdered his wife, but also the unborn child she was carrying. She was pregnant at the time.
Truckies listening to us through 2GN. There's a chase. Police chasing a silver Commodore southbound 20K south of Goulburn. Please be careful in the area. Just as well the chase is not happening out there in Queensland. News in 60 seconds. And it's good to have your company. 131873 is the open line number. 2GB.com. Click onto that feedback icon if you'd like to join us. The last hour of the program. Ray Hadley in the morning here on 2GB in Sydney, 4BC in Brisbane and stations across the nation. Ray, says David, I came to Australia as a migrant in 1991 from the UK. Have never claimed benefits, did a whole lot of unskilled and semi-skilled work in the first couple of years and built a career. Never been arrested, paid my health insurance and could afford to send my kids to a private school and I volunteer. I believe I'm a good citizen. I believe I put in my fair share. To migrants who believe they have a free ticket, I have a solution. Citizenship should be a probation for 10 years. In that time, reviews are triggered. When benefits claimed, arrests occurred, or treasonous or racist remarks are made, off they go. Citizenship is a gift from the population. It shouldn't be given or taken lightly. It's a very reasoned email. Thank you for making the point. Now... we've got something happening at Plumpton Marketplace. Kathy phoned me to tell me there's a man waiting for an ambulance there, and I know people in the area are trying to help the man. There's a suggestion he may have suffered some sort of medical emergency, but I believe emergency services are arriving there right now. So if you see ambulances around Plumpton or on the way to Plumpton, give them a bit of space. They need to get there. Someone with a legal mind has said, Ray, the evidence obtained can't... And you're talking about Margaret Kinnean, I guess. The evidence obtained can't be used against Miss Kinnean in a criminal hearing. It is unlawfully obtained if passed on to the DPP. If the evidence was obtained under warrant for another purpose, e.g. civil or an ICAC investigation or an investigation by a third body, which I think it was, it can't be forwarded for any other means without court issue. Case law relates to ASIC v. HIH Insurance and ASIC v. J.D. Rich, where evidence obtained for criminal investigation was later used by ASIC in civil proceedings. Big no-no. It can be only used for the purpose the warrant was issued for, says someone with legal training. 131873, well, I'm sure they've gone through that in chapter and verse and will continue to go through it. I noticed the Queensland Police have now got their own flying Robocop to help with intricate work at crime scenes. The Police Minister, Joanne Miller, announced today that drones worth $23,000 will be used in the field. Can I make a suggestion to you, Miss Miller? You need to put cameras in police cars so when spurious accusations are made against police, like they are in New South Wales, they can be either proven or disproven thanks to the CCTV. Good story coming out of Coffs Harbour, the Coffs Coast. The advocate up there says it was a twist of fate that may have saved the life of young Elias. Choking in the arms of his mother, Emma, and struggling to breathe, Elias was helped by a passing stranger known as Adam, who responded to Emma's cries for help. The dramatic incident highlighted in recent Thumbs Up we've heard from Elias's grandparents. After the praise for Adam was published, Elias's mum, Emma, reached out to let us know Adam was living in the same street as her and her son, and they'd remained in contact since the event that nearly claimed the little boy's life. It was an otherwise normal Tuesday afternoon when Emma sat Elias down to have a sandwich for lunch. When she noticed a 17-year-old choking, she attempted to dislodge the food and was caught in his throat. Unable to get the food out, Emma panicked, picking up her son and running out to the street for help. I tried to get out myself, tried tipping him upside down, everything. I started freaking. By the time I got outside, I flipped him over. He'd started turning blue. The single mum, she didn't know who to turn to. There were cars that slowed to have a look but kept driving. I was screaming. At that point, Adam drove past, turned his car around, raced back down the road to the struggling mother. He managed not only to dislodge the food caught in Elias's throat, but keep Emma calm while other passers-by call for an ambulance. That's a lovely story. Might have saved that little boy's life. A man caught driving while his licence was disqualified has been placed on a bond and put off the road for a further 12 months. This is from the Western Advocate in Bathurst. Benjamin Allen Gornall, 24, appeared in person and unrepresented before the magistrate Michael Allen in Bathurst back on May 18. The court was told on March 14 this year police were patrolling the Sydney Road at Kelso when they noticed a black Mitsubishi, which they subsequently pulled over. They spoke to the driver, Gornell, informed them the Highway Patrol car in-house video recording system was videotaping and recorded the conversation. Police told Gornell he'd been pulled over for the purpose of a random breath test and asked him for his driver's licence. He couldn't produce it. Didn't have it with him. Police asked if he had a driver's licence. He said, no, I don't. He was in contact with State Debt Recovery to resolve a suspension issue. A police check on him revealed he appeared before the Bathurst Local Court January 12 this year in relation to three drive while suspended matters and was disqualified from driving for 1 year. Mr. Allen convicted Gornall and disqualified him for driving for another 12 months from the expiration of the current disqualification period. So he's going to be off the road for about 3 years in total. He's obviously a complete imbecile. 131873 is that open line number, 2gb.com. Click onto the feedback icon. It's 10 past 11. It's good to have your company. 131873 is the open line number, 2gb.com. Click onto the feedback icon if you would like to join us. Just on other matters, I need to get hold of Carl Stefanovic about some emails I've got from North Queensland. But in the meantime, Brendan says, Ray, you presented the story about the drones. Oh, yes, the drones in Queensland that the police minister, Miss Miller, has announced. Yes. Is it possible police could use the drones to chase people? Or are they too dangerous as well? That ambulance has arrived at Plumpton Marketplace to attend to that gentleman, by the way. When I went out to the Flemington markets recently, I got to speak to Peter Debnam, the chairman of the board of the New South Wales Kids in Need. Now, it's a rather unique foundation, fundraising for six children's charities, Bear Cottage, the hospice, the Central Coast Kids in Need, the Duke of Edinburgh International Awards, Muscular Dystrophy New South Wales, Shine for Kids, and the Burns Unit at the Children's Hospital out at Westmead. So they're all very worthy causes. And he told me that they had an open house in mind, not just an ordinary open house, what they're calling the world's largest open house, and it comes up this Saturday in and around Sydney, the 30th of May. And the chairman of the board of New South Wales Kids in Need is on the line. G'day, Peter.
Good morning, Ray.
So it's Saturday, is it?
It's all happening Saturday, and thank you for launching it some weeks ago. It seems like years ago now,
yeah,
but only a few
time.
Weeks.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you, since you launched it, and with the Telegraph and all the publicity from 2GB, all the Air Force tickets went literally in 36 hours.
All right.
The Navy tickets, we've still got about 100 spots left.